Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in Central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and the spoken word. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with engineer Mike Murphy, and neighbor Mike Metz is here as the keeper of the Prairie Winds Prairie. What's new on your prairie, Mike?
Well, the prairie has gotten a little quieter. Insect sounds are louder, but the birds are quieting down. Probably some of them are molting and preparing for that migration.
And the nesting is essentially complete?
Nesting is essentially complete, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the weather will be another near-perfect day with a high of 89, so it will be hot and humid, and a low of this evening at 68. Temperatures in the mid-80s for the weekend, and very nice into next week, with highs in the upper 80s and lower 90s, with possible rain in the forecast for next Tuesday, and maybe a shower this evening. And it is National Radio Day. Radio is more than just announcers, news, and songs. Radio broadcasts provide real-time information. Radio has the ability to reach across borders and become a valuable source of information where reliable news is scarce. So thank you, Mr. Marconi, an Italian inventor who proved the feasibility of radio communication. He sent and received his first radio signal in Italy in 1895. So let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news for this week from the pages of our local newspaper.
There was plenty of news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start where we usually do, with last Friday's paper, which reported that the city of Ames has planted 375 trees since that derecho windstorm blew through last summer, bringing with it 100-mile-an-hour winds and plenty of destruction around the Midwest. Ames went days without electricity, and the city lost hundreds of trees in that one day. The city has announced a $4,500 Trees Forever Alliant Energy Plant Hope grant to help continue to repair the loss of much of the city's tree canopy. The grant will be used for an Ames Foundation event on October 9th, during which volunteers will plant trees. There was also word that the Garst family in Iowa was looking to sell 2,000 acres of its land in the west-central part of the state, with the provision that the acreage would be sold with conservation easements that ensure the continued use of management practices that protect and improve soil health. The family's farming legacy goes back three generations, when Roswell Garst hosted the late Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev on the family farm in 1959. Roswell Garst was a seed salesman who encouraged commercial fertilizer use and mechanization to improve yields. A few days after this story appeared, there was word that the family did indeed sell the land for more than $19 million to five buyers. And there was word that an Iowa State University graduate had appeared on ABC-TV's Good Morning America last week as part of an Iowa-focused segment gearing up for last week's Field of Dreams baseball game in Dyersville. 23-year-old Rebecca Runyon was on the TV show as part of a segment about Iowa businesses that had survived and thrived during the coronavirus pandemic. Runyon had founded Bessie's Parlor, an ice cream business with a philanthropic element. Saturday's paper reported that the Ames History Museum in Ames had bought its next-door neighbor, the Ames Pantorium. The museum plans to expand into that historic building at 410 Douglas Avenue, which is now the home of KHOI Radio. The History Museum plans to use the additional space for more exhibits. The Trib later reported that KHOI's next space had not been finalized. The Pantorium was built in 1926 and is part of the Ames Main Street National Register Historic District. Saturday's paper also reported that the state of Iowa is now on the clock to complete redistricting according to new census numbers that have now been released. The state's Legislative Service Agency will create the first draft of a new map. Then the Temporary Redistricting Advisory Committee will conduct three public hearings and produce a report for consideration by the State House and Senate. The census showed that the suburbs around Des Moines are booming. The data showed that virtually all mid-sized and bigger communities in the Des Moines metro are growing faster than state and national averages, more than 10 times faster in some cases. Nationally, the U.S. population grew by 7% over the past decade. Iowa grew at a slower rate than the rest of the nation, increasing its population by 5%. The state now has nearly 3,200,000 residents. About 85% are white, compared to 91% 10 years ago. The census also showed that two-thirds of Iowa counties lost population in the last 10 years. Sunday's Trib had more on the U.S. Census figures that had just been released. Those figures showed that Story and Boone counties both grew in population. Story County's population was about 9,000 people more than it was in 2010. Much of that increase came from Ames, which increased its population by about 7,500 people, up to about 66,000, an increase of nearly 13% in the past decade. Huxley, a town of about 4,200, was the fastest-growing city in the county, increasing its population by nearly 28%. Nevada went down in population, but not by much. The census found that nearly 7,000 people live there, a decrease of 127 since 2010. Boone County saw its population go up by about 400 people, but the city of Boone had a slight decrease in population, a loss of about 200 residents. Boone's population is now about 12,400. The Trib also reported that an Iowa ethics board had found that Governor Reynolds did not violate the state's ban on using taxpayer money for self-promotion when she appeared in advertisements encouraging Iowans to wear masks during the coronavirus pandemic. The Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board voted unanimously to find that the governor did not violate the law. She had been accused of doing that by State Auditor Rob Sand. And the Trib had a story about something that was planned for this past Tuesday. It was the annual Chalk the Walks event, with locations all around town. Chalk the Walks is a chance for people to put positive messages on sidewalks. Among the locations that were available in Ames, sidewalks outside the public library, at the community center, at Roosevelt Park, and in Campus Town. The city's planning and housing department teamed up with Story County Conservation to encourage people to take part in the event. Tuesday's Tribune reported more on the recent U.S. Census results. The census showed that Des Moines is the fastest-growing major metro in the Midwest. Dallas County is the fastest-growing county in Iowa, increasing its population by 51%. It's also the fourth fastest-growing county in the entire nation. The Iowa City Metro grew by 15%, and the Ames Metro grew 12%. The Trib also reported that schools across Iowa were shoring up their mental health services to students with millions of dollars in federal money through the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, also known as the CARES Act. It passed in March of 2020 as a $2 trillion relief package to respond to the economic fallout of the coronavirus pandemic. The money went to Iowa's 14 mental health and disability services regions. And the Trib reported that Nevada's Lincoln Way Energy is one of the organizations across Iowa that are increasing the habitat of the monarch butterfly. The population of the butterfly has been in decline in recent decades. 17 biofuel plants and partners across Iowa have dedicated more than 48 acres of habitat in a series of fueling stations for the butterflies and other pollinators. In 2018, Lincoln Way Energy became the first Iowa biofuel plant to become a monarch fueling station. The Nevada Ethanol Plant's two-acre area dedicated to butterfly-friendly plants and flowers has reached a maturity that boasts many blooms that provide nectar for butterflies and other pollinators. Monarchs travel through Iowa during both their spring and fall migrations, and they winter in central Mexico. Wednesday's Trib brought word that as Iowa State University students were moving in this week, the university was urging them to be cautious in the wake of the coronavirus. Neither coronavirus vaccinations nor mask wearing will be required on campus or at Iowa's other two public universities. But masks are being required at the ISU Student Health Center, the Ames Laboratory, on SciRide buses, in areas of the College of Veterinary Medicine, and at the discretion of supervisors at research labs. Vaccination information is being included with students' move-in information, as well as during the first week of classes. And the university will host free vaccination clinics through at least the end of September, using the Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson vaccines. ISU got thousands of people vaccinated in the spring, but it's not clear how many more remain unvaccinated. The university is taking some precautions to try to avoid a repeat of the start of school last year, when coronavirus cases spiked and the weekend before classes included big parties without masks or social distancing. Meanwhile, the Trib reported that University of Iowa President Barbara Wilson said coronavirus guidance there was not a political issue, but a health issue. She said masks and vaccines will be encouraged on the U of I campus. And Wednesday, the Trib had word that Mary Greeley Medical Center in Ames was seeing more patients in need of care in recent days, and that was not fully explained by the coronavirus. But virus cases are part of the recent spike, and most of Mary Greeley's patients who are hospitalized with the coronavirus are not vaccinated. And a spokesman said the hospital is admitting more patients under the age of 60 than it was during the early days of the pandemic. As for the hospital staff itself, Mary Greeley does not have a vaccine mandate, but 85% of staff members are vaccinated. The level of coronavirus spread in Story County is high, meaning people should wear masks indoors, according to guidelines from the Federal Centers for Disease Control. The 14-day virus positivity rate in the county was 7.6%. Yesterday's Trib reported that a petition is circulating among the Iowa State University community, calling on administrators to reinstitute last year's mask mandate out of fears that the university's recent coronavirus mitigation plans will not be enough against the Delta variant of the virus. ISU is encouraging that masks be worn indoors on campus and that unvaccinated people wear a mask anytime they are around others. But the Iowa Board of Regents has told ISU, the University of Iowa, and the University of Northern Iowa that they cannot require that a mask be worn on their campus, except for transportation, at medical facilities, and at certain other places. The Trib also reported that the nonpartisan state agency that will be drawing Iowa's new legislative maps will not finish its work on time to meet a constitutional deadline for the legislative redistricting process. The Legislative Service Agency expects to take until September 16th to complete the first map, making it impossible for the state to meet the September 15th constitutional deadline for enacting new maps for legislative districts. The Iowa Constitution says the state Supreme Court will step in if the legislature cannot finish work on the new districts by September 15th. And there was word that the Households of Bethany Care Center in Story City was celebrating the ongoing state fair in Des Moines by having its own state fair-type experience on its own campus. That includes having a quilt show, a car show, a tractor show, and even a petting zoo, among other things. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, happy to have been here on this Friday, and oh, so ready for the weekend. I'll make a return visit to Local Talk this coming Monday morning at 7, when Paul Wearson and I will host this broadcast and bring with us some guests you won't want to miss. Then I'll return Monday night at 7 on KHOI's Capital Week, where Laura Bellin and I will talk politics, Iowa style. I hope you can join us for all of it. In the meantime, go ahead. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News, and the music interlude was by Mountain, Leslie West's group from back in the 70s, Silver Paper. Open Your Heart and Let the Sun Shine In is a theme, and our next guest, Phyllis Schrock, tells us about a special group, the Iowa State University Women's Club. And tell us about your organization, Ms. Schrock.
Iowa State Women's Club is a large organization of women, and way back when, I think people might remember it as Faculty Wives, but of course that's not appropriate anymore. And this organization is a group that has women's interests in mind. So there are so many interest groups under that umbrella. And my group, called Block Builders, is one of those divisions. My group is a group of quilters and quilt enthusiasts. So we meet once a month, and we generally want to talk about quilting, getting ideas about quilting, problem solving with quilts that we're currently working on. And we've decided that we will want to have a fundraiser for Iowa ISU Women's Scholarship. So that's primarily what I'd like to talk about today.
Wonderful. Okay, the ISU Women's Scholarship. And now, is this a new project?
No. The ISU Women's Club really has been supporting women in all areas of education, mostly those people who are pursuing an advanced degree. And so I'm also on the committee that evaluates the scholarship applicants, and we have had outstanding young women who have been in veterinary medicine, who have been in clothing and textiles, who have been in community service organizations, and we've had young women from pretty much every culture who have applied for this scholarships. And last year, we were able to award five of them. And so our organization divvies up that money, and we also have some of it that is invested so that it's an ongoing fund.
Sure. I like the term investment because it sounds like you're assisting a lot of talented young women with many different varying skills, and you probably have some real headliners, but in some regards, each scholarship would go to somebody that's very deserving and maybe a star in their own light or in their own
absolutely.
Peer group. Sure.
That is so true. Now, just by way of information, in our scholarship fund update, which just came recently in our newsletter, the members were very generous. So there was a $1,000 match that was met and exceeded. But in the total gifts this past year, it was $8,349. From members, it was almost $5,000, and from interest groups, it was almost $1,400. And then the ISU Women's Club gifts to the foundation was over $2,000. So you can see the organization is a very philanthropic-minded group of women.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, those are fantastic percentages of your overall goals.
I just wanted to put a plug in for anybody who's listening that if they're fairly new to Ames, Iowa, one way to get very connected quickly is through the Iowa State University Women's Club, because we have so many interest groups, and there are groups who just go out for walks together or go to lunch together, or there's golfers, yeah. and there's wine tasters, and there's card clubs and book clubs. It's just an amazing organization. People can reach me if they're interested in block builders by calling me at 515-337-1713. And then there is a membership committee, of course, and I will direct them to the right place. There's a website as well, and that's www.isuwc.org, isuwomensclub.org. And we have a Facebook presence as well. So if you just look on Facebook, and the backslash would be ISUWC, and people will be able to find a lot of information about the group. And since it's a very philanthropic-minded group of women, I am not able to say whether it's more or less than the year before. I'm fairly new to Iowa, and so I don't know all of those details, but they are available. And my particular organization, we meet monthly, and we generally meet at the library. And we're open to new members, of course, so if people are interested, they're welcome to come. What we decided at one of our meetings was that we were having a free table, and people would bring started projects, or they'd bring some fabric that they no longer had need for. And finally, we said, you know, what would happen if we would all pool all the things that we don't want or need anymore that relate to quilting and crafting, and if we would have a garage sale, and then all the proceeds from that would go directly to the ISU Women's Scholarship Fund. And so we didn't know if we'd have enough, but the first year, which was 2 years ago, we were able to raise over $1,500 in a day and a half. And then we're hoping that this month, and it will be held on August 27 and 28 at 3011 Harrison Road. And we'll be open from 8 to 5, and then again on Saturday morning from 8 to noon. And I've been helping to prepare some of the items, and I can tell you that we have bundles of fabric, and this is quilt shop quality fabric that has been bundled together, and it's probably in true value worth $25 to $30, but the bundle is going to sell for $10. So they're very good bargains for people who are looking for fabric to either get started or to finish a project.
Oh, super.
Yes. We also have a large supply of yarn. And this isn't just scattered pieces. This is skeins of yarn, 6 to 8 in a bundle, that are gathered specifically for projects. So if somebody's looking for yarn, this is another great place to find it. We'll also find other things. There's a quilting frame that's going to be available. There's gadgets that people use that are specific to quilting. Certain kinds of cutters are available. And then there's some other designs that batting, for example, or ways to put your batting together if you have scraps of it and you want to use it up in a project. And so many wonderful items. There are totes that we're bringing in that are full of fabric and craft items that people will want to come and shop for.
Excellent. I have quilters in mind to make sure they hear this announcement. That's for August 27th and 28th. 3011 Harrison. Can you help me on the address? Where's Harrison?
People can find the North Grand Mall, for example.
Sure.
They would be driving past the businesses there, and then they would go on Bloomington Road, and that road goes across Stang, for example, if people are familiar with that street,
yeah.
And it would keep going until you're just about at the end of city limits, and then it's a right turn,
okay.
And then Harrison Road isn't very far from that. So if people are familiar with that area of Stang and where there are some businesses, and I think Fairway Market is close by there.
Well, this is really just an exceptional fundraising opportunity, it seems like, that you've hit upon.
Yeah.
It's unique, and obviously your members are going to be involved with this a really positive extent. What else can we bring up that would bolster your ISU Women's Club attendance? Oh, I think you said that you meet at the library. What date and time?
We meet the second Friday in the morning from 10 till about noon.
Uh-huh.
And it's generally in one of those conference rooms that's available in the library. Sometimes it's the PEO room. Sometimes it's the room adjacent to that one.
Okay.
It's whatever is available.
Sure.
And we generally have a roll call item that we talk about with quilting. Very often we have someone who is showing us a technique or an idea. We always have a show and tell. So when people have a project that they're in the middle of or that they finished, we hold it up so everybody can look at it and examine it carefully. We also decided that because we love to quilt and we have so many ideas about quilting, we said, what if we would start making some quilts that we could give away? And I made a contact to Linda Jones at the Ames School District, and I just asked her if there was any need among students K through 12 or thereabouts. And she said, oh my, yes, there is. And she was saying that sometimes families are in distress because someone has lost a job, or sometimes there's a family who, for whatever reason, had to escape in the dark of the night and couldn't take anything with them.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's a domestic violence situation. And so let's say that mother who escaped has a kindergarten and a elementary schooler and a middle schooler and a high schooler. They all will need bedding. And so we've made quilts. And one of the things we decided to do was to have a big event, which was our first in-person meeting last year. And it was on May 14th. And we met out at Moore Memorial Park. And Linda Jones and some other directors from the school district came, and we were able to give them over 50 quilts from smaller size all the way up to a single bed size. And Linda Jones, the person from the Ames School District who's my contact, said they've never received such a wonderful and timely gift. So we're really trying hard to use our gifts and talents to help others.
Oh, what a wonderful story to share on community radio. That is so wonderful, of people seeing a need and then fulfilling it. And I'll bet this makes people cry. I'm presuming that you touch a lot of hearts, I'm sure.
Well, thank you. And when Linda Jones and I visited, she said they're very, very tender and gentle about how they deliver the quilts because they never want to shame anybody for being homeless, for example, or for being in a situation that's out of their control.
Yeah.
And when you think about the smallest kindergartner, you know, a small quilt, which would be more like 42 inches by 42 inches, is about right.
Yeah.
And when you think about a middle schooler, it's probably more like 42 inches by like 50 or 60 inches. But when you think about a high schooler, it's 60 by 80 inches.
Yeah.
And we like to tie them or we quilt them on our sewing machines. And I have a long arm business in my home. And so I often will quilt them for others so that they can then be bound and delivered. And we put a little tag or a label on the back of it. And there's
a place
where the principal or the counselor or the home liaison officer can write the student's name. And it says on there, because we believe in you and think you are special, your friends at Iowa State University Women's Block Builders has made this quilt to give you and surround you with love. And then we put the date on. And it seems to be really important for some children, especially if you come from a large family, to have something that has your name on it.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and provides warmth and comfort. And with love stitched in every stitch, this is fantastic. This is wonderful. You're making a lot of people's day feel a little bit more special. Phyllis Schwag, is there anything else you'd like to include about your ISU Women's Club upcoming garage sale?
Yes. The women in my group decided one of the things that they wanted to do was to create raffle quilts that tickets can be sold on, and that money all goes directly to the ISU Women's Scholarship Fund as well. And one year we made a rather large one, and then this year the committee decided, what if we made two? One in ISU colors as a kind of a throw, and the other one all in holiday, December holiday colors. They're red and green, and it's quilted with a lot of holiday symbols. And so we're going to be selling raffle tickets on that through our ISU Women's Club as well. And we hope to raise some more money for ISU Women's Scholarships. So all in all, Block Builders is trying to use our crafting and quilting to create products that can be of use to other people. And then what is excess, we're happy to sell at a really reduced price so that others can enjoy using that material as well.
Oh, this is a natural. This is wonderful. I was hoping to bring in a raffle item. Love the raffle idea. I love all this. You are a club of ideas, it sounds like.
Yes. And, you know, our purpose really is to seek and share and expand our knowledge of quilting. We invite new quilters to come and join us, and along with experienced quilters, we always learn so much from one another. And then according to our website, the ISU Women's Club is a social and service organization providing opportunities for friendship, personal growth, and enrichment. And really, membership is open to any woman who supports that vision and the mission of the club. And we do have dues, of course, and we take care of our members by putting out a Women's Club Iowa State directory so you can connect with people with their names and addresses and the meetings and the meeting places. And it's a great and wonderful organization.
Oh, it's wonderful. And for closing, could you list your mission?
Yes. So Block Builders members seek to share and expand their knowledge of quilting. New quilters connect with experienced quilters, and we encourage one another, we explore ideas, and we learn to appreciate this art form of quilting.
Phyllis Schwag with the ISU Women's Club. Garage sale coming up August 27th and 28th, 3011 Harrison, 8 to 5 on Friday, 8 to noon on Saturday. There's going to be wonderful opportunities for quilters, and what a special guest you've shared with us on Local Talk, Ms. Schrock. Thank you.
Thank you. It's my great pleasure to be here.
Okay. What a great message to add to someone's quilt. Because we think you are special, your friends at Iowa State University's Women's Block Builders have made you this quilt to give to you and surround you with love, Mike Metz.
A great way to wrap some comfort and kindness around an individual in need, for sure.
Oh, what a story. Group. Yeah, what a group. So this is KHOY's Local Talk, and let's have a little more music from Mountain with more Local Talk to come. Yes, Mountain Music, Leslie West, guitarist, rest in peace, passed away last December in 2020. So this is KHOI, Community Radio's Local Talk, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum, today with our engineer Mike Murphy and my neighbor Mike Metz. Let's welcome Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer with the City of Ames. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Pat. Good to see you.
Oh, good to be here. Good to have you with us. Before we introduce your guests, do you have any announcements for the city?
Sure. I know that I might start sounding like a broken record, but I cannot stress enough the fact that next week is a big week of transition for Ames. We have Iowa State University starting session, as well as our local elementary, middle, and high school starting up. And so I just, again, remind motorists, the traffic is going to pick up. You're going to see extra people on the streets and extra pedestrians, and kids are excited. For some kids, it'll be the first time back to school in a long time. So there'll be those busy times again. The morning commute will get a little bit heavier, and we'll start seeing a little bit more traffic around those school release times, really anytime between 2 and 4 o'clock. And so we need everybody to kind of be the eyes and ears for those students who may not be paying attention. And I mean all the way from kindergartners to college freshmen, because it's a big week for them. And so we just need to show patience and plan a little bit of extra time in our day.
There you go. What a great message. Thank you for that, Susan.
And just some other things that I could remind you of. I know we've talked about them before, but I'm afraid I said the wrong date. Our inclusive crosswalk repainting is Tuesday. I may have said the wrong date before. It is next Tuesday, and we will be closing 5th and Douglas to repaint that inclusive crosswalk, which, of course, we talked about yesterday, was done in sort of a unique pattern of colors that reflect the diversity of our community. And so it's been a really popular place to visit and to look at. People really like it.
Yeah.
It's very colorful. A lot of selfies are taken there, but it's faded over the years. And so now it's time to refresh that paint. And we have city staff as well as local volunteers that will be coming to tape off those squares, those color squares, and repaint that crosswalk. It will take a little bit longer than a typical street painting to dry. And so it will be closed all day. So just a reminder that if you're in the Ames Public Library vicinity, it is 5th and Douglas. And my dog is noticing somebody outside.
Yeah, that's fine. Hey, I notice it's the rainbow colors in that intersection that are such a big draw. And actually, I think it's a good thing that it's being repainted. Just watch out for that next Tuesday.
Yeah, that vibrancy will come back. And then, of course, we have our regular scheduled city council meeting next Tuesday night. And Wednesday, you'll see a lot of city staff at Welcome Fest. Welcome Fest is a welcoming opportunity for Iowa State students, but it's at the Memorial Union. It really is open to anybody. And we welcome students back to Iowa State. We provide them information about the City of Ames. We have great participation from city staff as well as city council members. We give out City of Ames t-shirts, It's really a lot of fun, and it's a great opportunity for city staff who don't always get a chance to talk one-on-one with students to sort of understand those sort of trouble points or confusion. We get a lot of questions about how do we recycle in Ames, and why don't I get separate bins for my recycling? Get a lot of questions about where's a good park, and we can really promote things like Ada Hayden and Moore Memorial and Brookside Park, where we tell students, get off campus. Really, Ames has a lot to offer.
Oh, that's a wonderful opportunity. That's at the Memorial Union.
Mm-hmm. 5:30 to 8:30 next Wednesday.
Wednesday evening. Okay, great time of day to learn more about our fair city of Ames. I see that you have brought along a guest today.
Absolutely. I wanted to talk about, we are kind of, I would say we're sort of mid-summer. There's still a lot of heat left in the summer. It feels a little fall-like, but we can still have a lot of hot temperatures, and energy conservation is always important. Mm-hmm. Our electric utility is doing a lot of exciting things with conservation and rebate, and also with electric vehicles. The promotion of electric vehicles as an alternative to a gas-powered engine. I thought that our Ames Electric Services Director, Don Com, could come on and talk a little bit, just an overview of what they're doing. They've had some maintenance at the power plant, maybe an update, and just give us maybe what his next few weeks are going to be looking like.
Welcome, Mr. Com, and temperatures in the 90s coming next week.
Oh, you bet. Yes, it's been warm. The system is actually operating at kind of what I'll call peak efficiency. You know, we had some hot weather, some humid weather the last few days, and we were able to operate minimal outages for anyone. We were able to cover the load, and people could operate their air conditioners, which everybody enjoys on a hot day like today.
Mm-hmm.
So the system there, we're able to handle these. We still have a few hot days with the students back. Our demand does grow a little bit, you know, as there are more people in Ames. So we still ask people to use our energy wisely, but there are no concerns about not having enough or about overloading lines or anything like that. So conserve and yet don't worry about any kind of problems on the system. One of the exciting things, and this is more for us geeks in the utility side of the world, but this week we were able to bring our larger generating unit, unit number 8, back online. It's kind of been in a maintenance mode here for about the last, I want to think it's been down for probably a year and a half. And we were doing is long time. So we had our smaller unit running. Our larger unit allows us to burn more of the refuse-derived fuel. That's the processed trash that we receive from the county. And so unit 8's gone through a little bit of modification in the boiler where we added some coating to the tubes, and that just allows it to operate a little bit better, less problems by burning the garbage. And so we're excited to have that unit back online. And that came on this week. So it's been a milestone for the utility side of the city.
Yeah, it's great news.
Come back.
Great news. Yeah, I'm sure the efficiency has been improved and was one of your major goals of that generator number 8.
Yep. Efficiency and then the ability to, when you burn trash, it creates unique challenges within the boiler, and these new tubes are specially designed to handle that. And so we're just glad that we have these new tubes in there, and it will definitely operate more efficiently, but it's also more reliable too, which is also important for us.
That's important. Mechanical engineering at its finest there at the Ames Resource Recovery Plant. Mike Metz has got a question here.
Yeah, I've actually got a question and then a comment, but I'll do the comment first. You're talking about electric cars, Don, and the ISU Ollie had this fall will offer a one-day program on transportation alternatives featuring electric cars, and that kind of segues into what happened to the unit that graced the front of the power plant area. Did it take off? Is it being used, or is it being showcased someplace?
All right, so that's a little bit different than electric vehicles. We can talk about that, back to electric vehicles, in a second. But yeah, there's what we call as the solar crate that sat out kind of just off of Duff, right in front of the power plant. So That was a project that was kind of spearheaded by, was like the Iowa National Guard and a group of students over at Iowa State. So that was designed as a, what we in our world call a microgrid. In other words, it was a self-contained unit that you could bring into a remote area. This is why the Iowa Guard was involved. Or I think it would have been real handy for something like a derecho, where you could set that up in a parking lot. It would charge by solar panels, and there were plenty of batteries on the inside. It also had a backup generator. We had a car charger that was sitting there, and it had outlets so you could plug in anything from cell phones to, let's say you needed electricity for a wheelchair, something like that. So it was set up as a remote, self-contained utility power plant. So part of the funding came from what's called IDEA, Iowa Development Economic Agency, IEDA. I think I got that right. And so they had a big presentation up here, and they wanted to get it set up down there so people like the Department of Homeland Security and other organizations could see how that operated. So presently right now, that's sitting down in Des Moines, and there are discussions about how can we improve it? How can we make more of these? And should we get this into the communities? We're looking at possibly getting one for Story County and other places. And then, like I said, the Iowa Guard is very interested in using them when they go to a remote location. Long story short, it's moved out of Ames and is being seen now by state and federal officials.
Great. That to share the wealth with folks and let them know that there are mobile alternatives. Thanks, Don.
You bet. And you brought up electric vehicles, and I'm glad that Ali is doing that because we're very, very excited about electric vehicles. We had a new charger. Let me talk about the chargers first. So you can charge an electric vehicle off of a standard household plug. It takes a long time, but you can just plug your car in and it'll charge a car overnight. The next level up is a charger. You can still do it in your home, but it's more like a plug that you would see on a dryer, on an electric dryer or maybe an electric stove. So it's kind of twice the strength of a standard plug. That'll charge your car maybe in 4, 5, 6 hours. What we were able to do, and we highlighted this, if you will, on July 20th, we actually were able to get some federal funding, and we put in what's called a level 3 charger. And this is down on 16th and Dayton. They're just off of Highway 30, just off the interstate. We put in what's called a level 3, which is called a fast charger. And it's even more, if you want to use the term powerful, it's more powerful than the other two. And with one of those, you can pretty much charge a car in about 30 minutes or less. And so this really takes out what is called charging anxiety, where you have to wait too long to get your car charged. Nobody wants to drive an electric vehicle, say from Minneapolis to Kansas City. With these chargers, you can be driving from Minneapolis, stop and charge in Ames, and then keep going. And so we're super excited about that.
Yeah, the technology really catching up to an industry that Ames should be noted for its progressive nature. And that's on Dayton Road. That's just New 30.
North of it, right off. There's a Come and Go right there. And Come and Go was a great partner. They allowed us to install the charger, and we use a couple of their parking spots. So anyone can pull up, plug your car in, and there's a little restaurant there. There's obviously bathrooms and stuff with the gas station. And we're actually finding a lot of people using our chargers. Every day I come into work, there's somebody plugged into one of the chargers that we have at Vanshell. And they usually just either go over to the park and read a book, or they walk downtown and do some shopping. Yeah, it's more than just, hey, I'm going to charge my car. It's actually, I think, bringing people to the downtown area.
There it is. What a great service you're providing to the citizens of Ames and now travelers up and down the interstate highway system. Don, is there anything else you'd like to include today?
Oh, my gosh. I guess I'd still ask people, because we're in the hot summer weather, as Susan brought up before, you know, can continue to think about conservation and yet don't worry that the system can't handle it. I would like to bring up farmers markets too, and that gets tied back into the electric vehicles. So we've been working with different vendors, Ford and Tesla and Chevy and others. And at the last farmers market of each month, we've been able to get a car dealer to showcase their cars. So they've been bringing them to the farmers market, and some will allow you to test drive them. Some will allow, will give you a drive or give you a ride in one of the electric vehicles. And for anyone that has any interest in electric vehicles, I strongly encourage them to at least go and look at them, because I think that is definitely going to be a way to reduce greenhouse gases and make our world a cleaner place.
Make this world a better place. Thank you, Don Kamm, Ames Electric Services Director. And Susan, have a good weekend. Thank you, Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Bye.
Thank you.
Great. Let's welcome from ISU Extension, Jess Soderstrom. Hi, Jess.
Hello.
Hey, great to have you with us.
Yeah, great to be on. I've seen you before, and I never have, so this is a fun time for me.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, we've got some time this morning at ISU Extension. I guess for our listeners that may not be aware of your presence, and we're going to talk about 4-H, I believe.
Yeah, yes, we are Iowa State University Extension and Outreach of Story County. So we serve all of Story County, so our office is based in Ames. I'm the 4-H coordinator for the county, but I like to take time to remind the listeners or anybody that I talk to about extension and outreach that we do have four programming areas. So while my focus is in 4-H youth, we do have an ag and natural resources coordinator. Extension as a whole has a community economic development and that area, and we also have human sciences. So while in my office, I deal with the 4-H youth, we do have expertise on each of those areas, and we like to share that information with any group or individual in Story County. We recently moved to Ames back in March. It feels very recent, even though it was a few months ago. Mm-hmm. But we encourage everyone to come visit our office to access that research-based information that we can share and also to meet our staff, because we want to serve you. You are our client base, and anyone in Story County can use our services.
And that's at 1421 South Bell Avenue.
Correct. And yes, we are on the east side of Ames.
Pretty much far east. If you get to the interstate, you missed it. But go east on Lincoln Way. So I guess I'm presuming, is State Fair time kind of a big time of year for 4-H?
It is. So we hold the Story County Fair back in July, and that was an opportunity for 4-H members and SFA exhibitors to show their work for projects that they've been working on all year. So it is, the county fair is not required to participate in, but a lot of 4-H'ers and SFA students like to take that opportunity to educate and share their work, and it's really a great opportunity. And along with that, yes, is the Iowa State Fair, which is happening right now. Story County has quite a few static exhibits. So that is the non-animal exhibits down at the fair. Those are selected by a team of judges to be taken to the State Fair, which is a really great honor for those kids. And then, of course, we have 4-H'ers that exhibit livestock or small animals as well. So there's a ton of opportunity there.
So sprinkled throughout the livestock barns. But what is the other building where they might see the static displays or things that do not involve livestock?
That is in the 4-H exhibits building, which actually just got remodeled. So this is the first year that we've been able to have exhibits in that building, and it is so nice. I am so excited, I guess, in the new remodeled building. They've always been there, but in the new building, it's so nice.
But it was one of the historic buildings, I believe, there on the State Fair campus.
Yeah. And from what I can tell, they haven't changed the structural integrity very much. The outside of the building still looks the same. It is just the inside that got a remodel. From what I can tell, I'm not an expert, but it is great. So,
comfortable surroundings. Do you have any outreach programs coming up that you'd like to mention?
We do. So we have, our summer's kind of winding down, so schools will be starting soon, but we haven't officially released our No School Day day camp programs, but we do have quite a few coming up in October, November, and December. So anytime that your child does not have school, they are more than welcome to sign up to attend one of our programs. Mary Wilkins and I lead those a lot of times together, and it varies on subject areas. You do not have to be an enrolled 4-H member to participate in those, which is something that I think people don't realize. If you don't belong to a 4-H club, you are still more than welcome to involve yourself with a youth program that we offer.
And there's a website listed. Is that where they would get more information?
Yes. Our website is extension.iastate.edu/.
Yeah, include the extension.iastate.edu. /story. Well, I really admire the tenacity of the 4-H program over the decades. My goodness, what a history you have with an alliance with Iowa State University also.
Definitely. And the one thing that I am gearing up for this, well, not the one thing, but one major thing that I'm gearing up for in the next coming month is 4-H enrollment. So I've mentioned being an enrolled 4-H member and belonging to a 4-H club. Those opportunities open on September 1st. Anyone can participate. It is for all youth in K through 12th grade. But yeah, I encourage everyone to check out what 4-H is about. We have 30 different project areas in the 4-H program. So I always say that there's no way a child can get bored because there's always something new for them to explore and to learn about. So if you're interested in that and joining 4-H, we do have clubs all over the county in each town in Story County.
Oh, wonderful. Is there anything else, Ms. Soderstrom?
Yeah, I encourage people to check out our website. That's the extension.iastate.edu/story. Or you can always give our office a call if you have questions about any upcoming programs for adults or for youth.
Okay, stay safe at the fair. Thank you, Jess Soderstrom with ISU.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure with ISU Extension. Thanks so much. We'll look forward to seeing you again. We've got one other service announcement that I'd like to include.
This has to do with Ada Hayden, Pat. Ada Hayden Heritage Park has a golf cart tour. They've been doing this for a number of years now. Friends of Ada Hayden Heritage Park are sponsoring a golf cart tour for the Mobility Challenged Adults. This will be on September 9th, with the 10th as a rain date. The tours will highlight the origin of the lake, current vegetation, and the uses of the park, and the threats of water quality in the lake. There are three 90-minute tours that will be offered, and it requires a reservation, but you can get a hold of them. The tour can accommodate up to 6 groups of 4 adults each, and they'll be guided by a volunteer, and there'll be interpretation and questions answered. First tour is at 9:30, the second is at 11:30, and the last one is at 1:30 p.m., and it's on a first-come basis for reservations. So there is a phone number, but if you get a hold of the Ada Hayden, Friends of Ada Hayden, you can find out more. The phone number is 712-830-3736, or you can text Jim Patton. That number again is 712-830-3736 for further information on the Ada Hayden golf cart tour for those that are physically challenged.
And go out and enjoy and appreciate all the wonderful work that the Ames Parks and Rec program has provided. Learn about the stones, learn about conservation leaders. It's just a wonderful setting. What the heck did we do before there was Ada Hayden as far as a destination to be outdoors? It's just a wonderful amenity.
Great place, and I know we'll be talking about it in the future as migration occurs this fall.
Yeah, we'll be looking forward to some of those wolf osterite migration reports coming up in the fall. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday at 89.1 FM. So tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org and hit that play button. And remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find the yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is a community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Rudenberg and Lynn Carey. And thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy. And thanks to our guest, Phyllis Schrog, Don Com, Susan Guiasta, and Jess Soderstrom. And I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarba.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard was Mountain Silver Paper and Nantucket Sleigh Ride.
Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio.